And then Morton sucked and Diaz sucked and everything was perfect.
Wait, stop.
Which apparently Rob Manfred does not hate. No evidence of him hating the counting money part of the equation. And welcome to episode number 110 of Artificial Turf Wars. By the way, we'll blog for your contending team on a 3-month rental basis. Just email or text. We're easy. We're available because I am Greg Wisniewski and I am joined tonight by Joshua Howsam. Josh, how you doing?
I'm good.
And the incomparable Nick Dyka. Nick, how are you feeling?
Hey, Greg. I'm good, too.
All right. We're getting our feet back on the ground here. We actually have to talk about the last game of the first half, which has Marcus Stroman doing some post-game antics, Kevin Pillar getting injured, and then some other updates, including Estrada, Justin Smoke. We're going to talk about the All-Star game, because the All-Star game swallows up most of this week, and we did have our All-Star feature, importantly, or one All-Star, J-Hab, have an important role in this game. Then we've got to talk about Manny Machado not being a Baltimore Oriole anymore, and then we have the Cleveland Indians making a move, and maybe there's some implications there for the Blue Jays, because apparently they also have a third baseman who at one point was tradable. We have your questions, we have a do-over for something surrounding Bryce Harper, of course. Rob Manfred, what does he hate this week? Oh, you'll never guess. And then we're going to close it up, maybe tell you what we're thinking about for the second half. All that, and I'd like to say so much more, but probably just all that will fit into the podcast brackets here. Okay, so final game finishes in Boston. The Blue Jays get, they get embarrassed, kind of. And Marcus Stroman gets asked, oh my God, a question that isn't directly related to the game, and loses it. Like in the tunnel afterward, like where did he lose it, Josh? I don't quite understand.
Yeah, it was near, in the tunnel towards the clubhouses.
So he didn't lose it to anybody's. Well, okay, he didn't lose it to that reporter's face.
Well, he did actually. So like, what happened was he basically said there's an irrelevant question, then he walked away, and then he turned around and started ranting, and then Madani went over there. That Rosh Madani was the guy who asked the question, and then they were going, then he was yelling a bit at Madani, apparently. This was according to Caitlin McGrath's writing for The Athletic, who was there covering the event.
But nobody's disputed that account.
No.
Okay, Nick, what's the deal with Stroman here? Is he really this angry? Is he this angry about something else? Does he want to be on this team? Should he be on this team? I can go anywhere with that, can't I?
Yeah. I mean, I really don't see it as that big a deal. It seems like the story really came out because of maybe who he was saying it to more so than what he was saying. You know, I think these guys get frustrated all the time. And you know, like, you know, I think about that example. There's a really popular GIF in Blue Jays world.
A what?
A really popular GIF in Blue Jays world of Josh Donaldson saying some really colorful things to, I think it's someone on the Angels, if you guys know the one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to make Greg work the bleep button, but it's like, you know, far worse than what, like, I think what Stroman said. So,
well, I just cut you off for a second there. I think that the issue here wasn't so much the language that he used. It's the thing that became the story is that he was saying it about his own team, right?
Right.
And, you know, it wasn't that, oh, he's being vulgar. It was that he was basically saying the team sucks.
Oh, which, okay. So, yeah. Like, I mean, is that a crazy thing for him to say about that team? I mean, I think he's probably frustrated, and like, he doesn't mean that they're going to suck forever, but you know, they have been playing poorly, right? Leading into the All-Star break.
Yeah. I mean, this was sort of the basically when people were reacting to it, it's like, yeah, they do suck, right? The team is terrible. He said that he was terrible too at the time, right? So it wasn't like he was blaming anybody else for his failures or anything like that. He was just extremely frustrated, but still, it's just something you don't typically want to be said publicly, I guess, right, is the idea.
Yeah. And you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if there is a, you know, a problem, or like, you know, he's wearing thin on his teammates. But I mean, I have no way of knowing if that's actually the case or not, right? Like, you know, I don't know, people could love him. He was in Jose Bautista's wedding. So I think ultimately this is really not really a big deal. I think a lot of, again, I know I say this every time I'm on with you guys, but the fluctuation in Stroman's performance, I think it just has to do with his profile as a pitcher, you know, a guy who tries to induce weak contact and keep the ball on the ground. And like, you know, his ups and downs, I don't think are tied to his off field, either outbursts or, you know, self-marketing.
I don't think anybody's suggesting that, actually.
No. Okay.
No. I think for me, the issue becomes, it's a corner he sort of painted himself into, because the question was very much not pertinent to the game at hand, which is all well and good. If you're Marcus Stroman is not available to the media except after starts. He will not make time for people in the media, and people in the media, unfortunately, have other stories to write that are not game recaps. Especially, as was pointed out, people who are trying to put together content for a network that is heavily, heavily tilted with Blue Jays content, to saturated with it. And for Arash, his only opportunity to get a take, or maybe get a take, I mean, he might not get any answer at all, from Marcus about a team he previously played on, is there the day that Marcus starts. So I think, I mean, if you're not going to answer questions, don't answer questions. But don't get angry because you don't like the questions on the only day where you answer them. I just think that's he's just asking for more aggravation on his part. That's where I come from on that.
Yeah, I mean, Madani probably could have said, like, I know this isn't relevant to this game, but I have the story to write, etc. But the reaction was outsized, and but I don't know. There's much more to say beyond this, which I guess is what we're all trying to say. It's like, it wasn't really a rational thing to say, and you know, the way to react. The things he said made sense, but also probably shouldn't have been said. But that's it. Like, move on.
Okay, we can move
exactly.
on. Exactly. This is the same. Was it the same game or the game before where Kevin Pillar got injured? I've lost track.
It was I believe it was this game actually.
So
no. No, it was the game before, because Gavilo was pitching.
Right, so Kevin Pillar, finally, in the outfield, despite the 500 dives that he has made, some of which have been absolutely necessary, other ones not so much, he actually hurt himself with an unpronounceable body part in his shoulder. apparently, the way he sprained it, it popped outwards through a bunch of tissues, which just sounds horrific, but I guess if it pops inwards, you can do serious damage. So he kind of got lucky, but Kevin Pillar is not going to be the center fielder when we come back from the All-Star break. What does this do to the outfield, Josh?
I mean, obviously, look, this isn't the way you wanted this to happen, but this gives the team the opportunity to see what this outfield would look like without Kevin Pillar. Because as we talked about in this podcast before, there's a lot of reasons to expect that he might not be manning the position next year, or at least that he shouldn't be. So it gives them a chance to play Grichuk in center and then throw Dwight Smith out into one corner with Teoscar Hernandez in the other, and just really see what they can have going forward, because they're not doing anything this year.
Well, I'd be curious, and Josh, you know probably more about this than me, but Is it realistic to have Alfred come up and play now that there is an opportunity for him to play every day? I know he's not been lighting the world on fire in AAA, but doesn't Dwight Smith kind of already profile as more of a fourth outfielder than, you know, a capable major league starter?
Yes, that's definitely true. I mean, and Granderson's still taking some of this time as well. But I think if there's one of the guys that's going to come up, it wouldn't be Alfred, who probably needs some more time in AAA. He hasn't played that much because he keeps getting injured. The guy that, if they really need to bring someone up to see, can this guy do it? It's Dalton Pompeii, right? Who just got back from injury. It's like, bring him up, we'll talk about this later on for what we won the second half of the season, but I think he should come up and play every day or five out of every seven games or something just to see, is there something there? Because he's out of options at the end of the year.
Wow, that happens fast.
when you're Dolph Pompeii and you just can't put the games under your belt, it does seem to. I think maybe this is all the more reason to move Curtis Granderson, because then it frees you, gives you some more opportunities without having to make an excuse for not playing Curtis Granderson. And I keep thinking that we're going to start a podcast with trade talk, and we haven't yet. Does that surprise you, Nick, given what we're about to talk about coming up with the other teams that have made moves?
No, you know, personally, not really. And I think we talked about this last time I was on too, but I just think there's so many teams in rebuilding mode and the contenders are kind of already so stacked that there's just not a lot of opportunities to trade guys as much as there would be in other years, right? Where there's four or five teams kind of competing for the wild cards or the divisions. So it doesn't really surprise me.
I think that's still a bit overstated because the AL is locked down, essentially. Oakland might have something to say about it, but not really. And then there's the battle in the AL East, which is a real one. So that's why the Yankees are looking to add pitching. But the NL is pretty wide open right now. I mean, there's seven teams that can realistically make the postseason right now, maybe eight. And so that's why, you know, one of the things that people thought might happen is that the Brewers would strike early because, you know, they can't let the Cubs get too far ahead of them, right? And the Dodgers on the flip side, which again, we're going to get to in a bit, they wanted to start pulling away from the Diamondbacks. So there are opportunities to trade. I just think that we've seen the elite pieces go first. And now people, when they missed out on those, will transition back to what's left.
All right. So the one guy who is really trying, well, okay, there's a couple, but the one who might actually be able to build his trade value before that that non-waiver deadline with a start or two, he looks at the clock again, is Marco Estrada. What's the word, Josh?
He's going to be making a start in this like turn through the rotation after the break. I think it's toward the back of it, so he gets just a couple extra days. But the plan as of right now is that he's in the rotation. And that's pretty good because we've talked about all these Jays players getting injured going into the All-Star break or to the trade deadline. And he was pitching a lot better. And so hopefully he can come back and pitch like he was just before getting injured. And then the team will pick him up for, I don't know, whatever. You know, like maybe they can do a deal like they did for Teoscar Hernandez last year or a lesser player than that. But he needs to pitch well.
Indeed. Now, here's the other one. How about this? Should Justin Smoke have been the all-star first baseman? As I'm making bad jokes about our only all-star player, Nick, do you think Justin Smoke's late surge was just, is it still all-star sub worthy?
You know, he's in that same range as like a Jose Abreu, I think. I wouldn't have been shocked if he made the team, over half, but I think like the nice thing about the surge though is like kind of reminded me that kind of despite kind of the ebbs and flows of Smoke's production, that he's kind of settled in as a pretty good, you know, above average hitter over the last, you know, year. Even if you take off the first half of 2017 where he was on fire, you know, even over the last year, the last calendar year, he's been a pretty solid offensive piece for the Jays. And one that, you know, would probably be more appreciated if he wasn't literally the only hitter in the lineup with a weighted runs created over 120.
So just for reference, Justin Smoke's weighted runs created is 29 points higher than Jose Abreu, and his OPS is 97 points higher.
Wow.
So this is because he's just been absolutely on fire.
Just starting.
This is sort of what we saw.
May, sorry, June. He started doing that one in the middle of May as opposed to when you need all-star votes, right?
Yeah. I mean, especially, you know, in the last calendar month, again, just to make this simple, he's hitting .304 with a .389 on base and a .684 slugging with seven bombs and nine doubles in 90 plate appearances. And, you know, this is obviously, he's not going to continue that because he's not a guy who's going to hit .304 as we saw last year when he had that hot start and fell back. But this is basically what we saw from him last year. He can, he has the ability to go on these stretches where he's really, really good.
Yeah. I think we're going to look up at the end of this year and at the end of next year, and we're going to see a guy who hits about 250 with a 350 on base and a, you know, slugging around, you know, 475, 500.
And that's a good thing. It's one of the few ongoing bright spots I think that the Blue Jays have locked down for the, you know, regardless of what happens through 2019, 2020. Justin Smoke is I never thought I'd say this. Justin Smoke's a nice thing to think about. Okay.
Yeah.
Shall we move?
We should go back to our podcaster before last season, our 25 and 50, and see what we said about Smoke.
Well, not with him in the room. I wouldn't necessarily do that. So, the All-Star Game. I would present to you this. The All-Star Game, first of all, they had the Home Run Derby, and then they turned around and they had a second Home Run Derby later the next day. Kind of a weird way to set up that event, but yeah. So the All-Star Game, in my mind, was the perfect microcosm of baseball as it stands in the year 2018. If I get these numbers wrong, Josh, forgive me and correct me, but there were 10 home runs hit in a 10-inning game, 9 solo shots and a 3-run bomb, and the only run that didn't come on a home run was a sacrifice fly.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. Brantley did not get the memo.
Yeah. Dude, hit a home run. How hard is it? It's everybody else is doing it. So,
and 25 strikeouts.
Yep. That's amazing that baseball's All-Star Game is probably the only one that's played anything resembling the rest of the games in the sport. I mean, we've all sat through NBA and NHL All-Star Games where literally nobody wants to put anything on the line. What amazes me, though, is the character of 1970s All-Star Games where you see guys running the catcher and throwing hard and, you know, crashing through the second baseman. And that was that game then, and you can feel that that's how that game was played every day then, probably too rough. And now we get the ultimate dingers, walks, strikeouts, and lots of pitching changes. I don't even think it felt like there were too many pitching changes in this game. That's how bad, good, weird it was. And I want to say bad. It wasn't bad. Because as a result of the most unlikely two-run game-tying home run in of all time, was it Diaz hasn't given up two runs in it? Well, who is it who hasn't given up two runs in an inning? Was it the 10th inning?
Probably
pitcher?
Diaz.
Diaz hasn't given up two runs in an inning all year. Boom, tie game, two runs. Hey, there we are. Gives an opportunity, Nick, for who to close it out?
One J.A. Happ.
Amazing. Who knew he was a closer?
Yeah, he hasn't been one since his freshman year at Northwestern. That was his last time he got a save in his life.
I think that's a really nice moment for him, because it looked very much like he was just going to be that guy who warmed up in the bullpen as a spare, which would have been kind of sad for his first All-Star appearance.
Yeah, and he was told before the game that unless the game was out of hand or went to extra innings, he wasn't going to pitch, and that's kind of unfortunate, just because, you know, J-Hap's not a guy who's necessarily likely to make another All-Star team. He's 35, and, you know, he's not one of these top guys who's going to put up a 2.5 ERA for the first half of the season. He's a very good pitcher, but he's not that. And then so when you see it's like Charlie Morton's getting 2 innings in relief, it's just like, oh, couldn't one of these have gone to Happ just so he could get in the game? And then Morton sucked and Diaz sucked and everything was perfect.
Oh, man. Yeah, so I don't remember an All-Star game with that many runs scored either, as much as it was, you know, everything was a bomb. That was kind of weird to see offense in the All-Star game for the first time in forever.
Not ever. There was a stretch where there was a lot of games like that, but for the last few years, they've definitely been all low scoring.
You know what? I had another thing, and yeah, I don't remember what I was going to say, so I'm going to move on like a professional. So immediately, like what, 2 seconds after the All-Star game finished, Manny Machado was traded, right? That's how it worked?
Yeah, pretty much.
who wanted to see him traded in the middle of the game so he could play an inning at at short or third for the National League? With like a big, maybe a piece of tape across his chest that said Dodgers on it.
Does the Hulk Hogan just rips his jersey off and it's got the other one underneath?
Oh man. So I mean, people hate the Dodgers, but if your team had that much money, would you not want them to do exactly what the Dodgers do every year, Nick?
Yeah. And like Josh was saying earlier, like the Diamondbacks are not that far behind them in the division. You know, I think the Dodgers would have kind of distanced themselves from Arizona even without Machado. But if you can make the deal, and you know, from all the kind of reports of the prospect writers, the Dodgers didn't even give up any of their kind of elite talent to do it. So, you know, they kind of went for quantity over quality. So if I'm in the Dodgers position, I make that trade too.
And it's worth noting too that they're still under the luxury tax.
Oh, yeah.
Don't know how they manage that with this roster, but they are. And that's actually pretty significant for them that they managed to add Machado while still staying under that and taking his salary so they didn't have to give up better prospects. This is like last year too. You know, they gave up Calhoun's all right, but they'd still their best guys, Verdugo, Buehler, and there's a guy whose name I'm not remembering right now. They've not traded them away. They still kept their best guys. This is what Boston did a few years back, is what the Yankees have been doing. It's, you know, when you can keep your best guys, it doesn't really matter if you trade the guys behind them.
Now, I'm going to bring up the Orioles side of this, not for the prospects they got, because I don't care about Orioles prospects, and I'm sure if they got a pitcher, they'll make him blow up anyway. But the Orioles are horrifically bad with Manny Machado, legitimate all-star starter, on them. How bad are they now without Manny Machado, all-star starter, on the team?
Don't ask questions, Greg. We're just going to take our easy wins and be on our way.
They're 28-69. And that's not the worst winning percentage in baseball, thanks to the Royals.
Wow. But still, 28-69 is, and it's, yeah. I mean, to be that bad, you have to be bad at everything. But my understanding is there isn't a player on the O's with an OPS over 720. Like, not even,
probably right.
Not even small sample size guys who've only been up for a cup of coffee or for an injury. Like, nobody has had a hot streak in their whole lineup now that Machado's gone.
Yeah, that's really, really bad.
So remember,
Adam Jones is at 723. Mark Trumbo, 761.
They're big power hitting outfielder / first baseman. Has, yeah, an OPS.
They're 39 and a half games out of first.
So they're further out of first than the number of games that they've won?
By double digits. At the All-Star break. It's really pathetic.
All right.
This is a gentle reminder that it could be always worse, Blue Jays fans. It could always be worse.
And remember, this is the Orioles, on principle, do not participate in the international free agent signing period. How's that working out for you guys?
Yeah, it's funny. Dan Duquette recently came out and said they're going to start focusing on that. Hey, great idea.
Where'd you come up with that? Oh, my God.
Of course, okay. Dan Duquette's going to be fired when the season ends, so who knows what's going to happen there.
Indeed. So the other trade that came down, Nick, was for Brad Hand, who has a name that sounds very pitcherish. I don't know if it's a good pitcher or a bad pitcher. Moves from the Padres to the Clevelands. What do you think this means for all of our guys who are ready to go out the door currently residing in the Blue Jays bullpen?
Yeah. I'm going to double down on there's more supply than there is demand, and just say, yeah, I think there's so many relievers. I know last time we were on, we talked about how there's elite relievers, right? Like Brad Hand and Raisel Iglesias and Blake Treinen. But there's a lot of relievers that are kind of in that Ryan Tepera, John Axford category too, right? There's Kyle Barraclough, Shane Green, Joaquin Soria, Jake Diekman. There's just so many relievers on teams that are selling that, like, I wouldn't be surprised if the Jays aren't able to move anyone, even though there's more of a demand for relievers than position players.
Well, I mean, Kyle Barraclough is in that elite reliever camp that you were talking about before. He's not comparable to the Blue Jays guys.
You don't think so? He walks a lot of batters.
Yeah, but he's still, the way the Marlins have ever reported is they're pricing him that way.
Oh, he's not priced to move, eh?
No, well, he's not a pending free agent, right? So there's no need for them to move him. So, but Soria is definitely one of those guys. And this is why that I've been talking about that Sinwano is the guy who might be more valuable, or Tapera more valuable, because there's control attached to them. They're not just rental relievers.
Right.
But as it pertains specifically to this deal, in which, you know, like the Indians, their bullpen was bad this year, which was not expected to be the case. They're like last in the league or next to the Royals or something. And they got Brad Hand and Adam Simber, both of whom are really, really good relievers. And I think that specifically hurts the Blue Jays, because that was a market where they could have targeted to make a deal, because they needed multiple arms. And now they've just gotten two really good ones. So now their need is lessened.
And in addition, the piece that Cleveland gave up was apparently a primo piece of their farm system. Yes?
Yes. Yeah. Francisco Mejia, he was a catching prospect. I think he was number 5 on the list that Keith Law put out today of his top 50 prospects. But there, are questions of whether or not he can stick at catcher.
Yeah, most people think he likely can. Just part of the reason that he wasn't catching as much with Cleveland is because they had Gomes. But he's elite, right? This is exactly what I was talking about before. Like, if you want to get a Brad Hand, or if you want to get a Raisel Iglesias, or I think Kyle Barraclough right now, you got to give up something like that. And not a lot of teams are willing to do something like that. And surprising, actually, Cleveland did this again after giving up two guys to get Miller a couple years ago. But, you know, so the Jays guys will still be in demand. It's just a matter of who will take the deal that's being offered by the other teams. It's like basically like, here's the offer, whoever says yes first gets the guy.
We shall see. And I think on that note, unless you want to add anything else, as you occasionally do, Josh, I think we'll take a breather.
I do, yeah. I wanted to specifically talk about if this happens, right? If Tapera goes, or Clippard goes, or whoever, it'll be really interesting to see what the bullpen looks like going forward, because I think it'd be a really good chance for Tim Mayza and Jake Patrychka to actually get a bunch of innings, because they've looked really, really good of late in the Toronto bullpen, and I'd like to see them actually get a more leveraged role.
Sounds fair. Certainly anybody leaving is going to give somebody an opportunity. The wonderful democracy of the bullpen. And on that note, we're going to take a little bit of a breather. We're going to come back with a couple of questions from you and the fun stuff. Always the fun stuff. We'll be right back. And we have returned. Yes. And of course, the main reason that we return at this part of the podcast is so that we can answer your questions. After a slight pause.
Time now to hear from our listeners.
That just seems silly.
Here are the rules. First, I ask a question, then you ask a question.
Now, how does that sound, sweetheart?
Could you repeat the question, please?
The players, I think our question askers have perhaps taken a short all-star break for the most part, but there are a couple. There's one from July 18th from Gideon Turk, former Baseball Prospectus alumni. Can you guys discuss, or have on a guest to discuss, Jonathan Davis and fill us in on who this dude is? So you've gone to some trouble there, Josh. Who this dude is?
Yeah, so I spoke to Adam McInturf. We've had him on the podcast before. He's with 2080 Baseball. And I'm just going to quote directly what he said to me. There's Flores as a useful reserve player given his athleticism and speed. He plays a good center field with quickness of his defensive stride and how well he accelerates to the gaps. He has strength for his size, but I don't think he's a guy who should be looked at as a potential power contributor, and that might stand in the way of a true everyday role. In the best case, he's making contact and on base enough to be a Delino Shields Jr., but he might be an athletic fourth, fifth outfielder type. And this is not something he said, but just adding, he's done very well against left-handed pitching the last few years, so if he's in that role, he could at least platoon.
Interesting. So that's Jonathan Davis. What level is Jonathan Davis at the moment?
He just got called up to Buffalo.
There you go. Closer than you may have known. Okay, question two. You want to give me question one of us question two, Josh?
Sure. So this is from Luke Kent Even Anymore at Split Letters. Who are the Jays going to get this offseason to match the impact of the deals for Kawhi Leonard and Jonathan Tavares?
Obviously Bryce Harper, right?
Yeah. He's the one at that level of profile within the sport. Although I don't know what would you guys do if for some crazy thing the Jays landed Harper? Like I'd be willing to I'd be willing to like probably put my house on that they're not getting Harper.
Yeah. What would I be willing to do? I'd be willing to start watching Blue Jays baseball games on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Or maybe it'll be the opposite of this. Like, so it's just about impact and splash, right? So they'll make some crazy trade where they trade Osuna and, you know, one of their other guys for, you know, like the best pitcher prospects in all of baseball. It's just a huge splash. You get the best guys in the world kind of deal because, yeah, they're not getting Bryce. It's not happening.
Yeah. Is there anyone else still coming up in that free agent class as like, even like a 2B level compared to Bryce Harper?
Well, there's still, I guess a couple of the guys have already signed now, right? With Charlie Blackman's off the board, but Andrew McCutchen, would he be considered maybe like a 2B?
I don't think so. Not anymore.
He's like a 3B. I like Kutch. I really do.
Well, it's Machado is the answer.
Yeah.
Daniel Murphy? Although,
yeah, that's the thing. Murphy and Dozier, they're not having very good years. Well, Murphy's been injured all year, but. And then it's like you have Clayton Kershaw potentially.
Ooh.
Who is clearly broken.
I think it's important to note too, and I know a lot of people have probably said this over the last couple of days, but the impact of a star player in baseball, it just doesn't have the same effect as like Kawhi Leonard impacting the Raptors.
No. I mean,
yeah, right. He's one of five guys that's on the court, and he can defend, you know, you can put him on the best player on the other team, and baseball just doesn't work like that. So, you know, depth is so much more important, I think, for the Jays and than it is for the Leafs or Raptors.
Yeah, it's even like John Tavares, it's not the same impact as Kawhi Leonard. Just it goes down the spectrum.
Indeed. Too many men on the ice. No, wait. I'm going to move on to Brendan Kuhn's question. BK at Brendan Kuhn asks, is watching Blue Jays baseball bad for my health? Luckily, he has a follow-up question because I'm not a doctor. For you, Nick, if you're a GM and Rogers presented you a 2019 payroll of no more than 2018, but gave you full autonomy to choose however you want to approach 2019, what would your offseason look like? So in the GM's chair with no additional dollars, but no untouchable assets.
Right. I'd slash and burn, I think, unless that, you know, there weren't any good offers out there for some of the Jays' better pieces. I think if you look at the American League and even the National League, it's just the teams that are at the top are so good that I don't know if a rotation led by, you know, present day Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez is going to be good enough to get the Jays into like a competitive position. So I'd look to trade what you can so that in 2020 you have like, you know, the strongest group of young players possible to kind of build around.
And here's the problem with that strategy though. If you do that, if you just like burn it to the ground and prospects all, you're wasting the first probably 3 years of most of those players' life because they're not going to all be good at the same time. Life, career.
Yeah. Baseball life.
Right? And so...
Well, my question would be, who do you get instead to put around them that doesn't waste those first few years?
Well, I really liked what Jonah Carey was suggesting. He basically did this. He wrote a piece on this a few weeks ago. The general idea, go try to trade for Jacob deGrom or Noah Syndergaard or whatever, and actually try to build like some really great pieces and then fill in through free agency. And if you can't do that, if for some reason, well, they're for very obvious reasons, you can't do that, then you go, okay, well, we're not going to win this year. We're not going to win next. But I don't think you can, you still have to get enough good players that there's a chance that if you have a monster season from Vlad Jr. and Bo Bichette that you're contending, because you don't want that to happen and you're still in fourth place.
Right. I mean, how much more realistic is getting Jacob deGrom than signing Bryce Harper, though, really?
Oh, without... if the Mets make him available in trade, it's much more realistic.
Yeah, but the trade guy is Bo Bichette or Vlad Guerrero, and now we're back to square one.
I don't know. I mean, like, probably Bo Bichette. I don't think Vlad Guerrero would have to be in that trade. But I mean, if you went to the Mets and you said you can take six guys that aren't those two, I think they say yes.
I think you have to think about the $40 million that's sitting with your two deadweight players as well. Because getting them out of the way gives you a tremendous amount of flexibility. If you can get someone to take some of that salary and pay a real player.
You can't. I can't see any way you could do that. Especially with the year Russell Martin's having him, George Lewiski not playing at all.
Well, if you're trying to move just, you know, a quarter or half of the remaining salary, and you're giving up a Bo Bichette, maybe you can. Maybe you can talk someone into taking that.
But that seems like a horrible use of assets. You're trading your second best prospect just to give up some money.
Well, again, to give you that, if you're looking for flexibility, you I just don't see this team sitting with $40 million on the books and having still wiggle room. Again, though, I don't know that you're not getting a bigger payroll is actually realistic. The Blue Jays tend to move that payroll a little bit every year, at least with kind of the inflationary rate, and they take into account the exchange rate. So I guess the question maybe isn't as fair.
Although with the drop in attendance, I think that they're not going to get a raise in payroll. But basically, it's like my idea is like if you can build a team without giving up your top guys that can be actually full of top talent instead of this mediocre stuff halfway that they did this year, do that. And then if not, then I'm right there with you, Nick.
You know, actually, you know what? And we didn't really put this on the list of things to talk about, but I think a lot of it has to do with Josh Donaldson. If you can get Josh Donaldson on like a more affordable 2 or 3 year deal because he's coming off the year he's having, and you tie a qualifying offer around his neck, that to me might go a long way in like being able to extract some really high end talent at like a below market price that could go a long way.
Okay.
All right, we are going to move on to our next little note, which, of course, is a do-over the way we like them around here.
Oh, my God, did he really just say that?
But we can try again, right?
You talking about a do-over, baby? Are you talking about a f***ing door?
We believe in second chances.
All right, this is your do-over, Josh. Do you want to set this up before I play your little clip here?
Sure. So this audio was taken right when Bryce Harper took his break with about a minute and 20 left in the home run derby, which was a fantastic event, by the way. I love this format. I love the excitement that it creates in the final round with the timer ticking down. So yeah, this was, so he did took his time and he took a break, and the fans were chanting Harper or something like that. They were chanting for Bryce Harper. And then he said this.
I think this is how you want to script it if you're a Nationals fan here. You've been watching this kid play since 2012. He's only 25 years old, but never played in the World Series. This might be the most the fans have been behind him at a Nationals game in his entire career.
What?
So when you look up hyperbole in the dictionary, there's a little button and you press it and it plays that clip of the audio. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Yes. He's played in 4 different postseasons, including 3 winner go home game fives.
This is an exhibition where guys get batting practice balls thrown to them and they golf them over the fence for 2.5 hours, and they literally drink Gatorade on the field and take selfies while doing this, right? This is the same event, right?
Yeah. It was just like such a name commentary. It's like, come on, man.
he's had a rough first half, I give him that, and he's probably not heard a lot of cheers in the first half, but they started to cheer, like, I think was it Baez or Muncy or somebody as he was catching up in the last 30 seconds trying to tie up in a previous round. Like, at that point, I think there was enough beer on tap that they were just cheering everything. It clearly was not, you know, any kind of be-all and end-all. You're absolutely right.
So the do-over here, just if you want to talk about the special attention he's getting because he's in Washington, just say that. Now, this is like, you know, the type of attention that's got to be feel really special. It's at his home park, and it might power him through the end of this round, which he was awesome to finish it off. Say something like that. It's kind of cool. And then when it happens, you can say, hey, look, and say something dumb again. But not this.
Yeah, you can talk about the Cinderella story. You could talk about the drama of a moment, you know, in your quote-unquote hometown. I get that. That's what I was expecting. But man, it personally for Harper, I'm sure it was just fun. It's just fun. I do not have a button for Rob Manfred hates, and I really am thinking we should do this eventually. Did you hear what Rob Manfred hates this week, Nick? I don't know if you were tuned in.
Yeah, no. This one really I thought was particularly annoying. And personally, I'm not as opposed to Rob Manfred tinkering with the rules of the game, I think, as much as some are, because I think it's great to be forward thinking and try to think about how you're going to grow the game.
Wait, stop.
All I'm saying
is just stop for a second. Okay, stop. What does Mon tell me what he hates this week?
Yeah, you're right. So basically, over the All-Star break, Rob Manfred made some comments that suggested the reason Mike Trout isn't as popular as he is, or as he could be, is that he doesn't want to market himself. And obviously,
Mike Trout.
Yeah.
He hates Mike Trout, the very best player in his game, and he doesn't like the way he carries himself or markets himself. Are you serious? Like, why?
Well, yeah.
Well, here's my question. If it's Mike Trout's job to market himself, what is Rob Manfred's job? Like,
would you like the statement? I will briefly read the statement from the commissioner's office, just so everybody knows. Mike is a great, great player and a really nice person, but this is the commissioner. But he's made certain decisions with what he wants to do and what he doesn't want to do and how he wants to spend his free time and how he doesn't want to spend his free time, Manfred said. That's up to him. If he wants to engage and be more active in that area, I think we could help him make his brand really, really big, but he has to make a decision that he's prepared to engage in that area. It takes time and effort. I'm pretty sure he sat down for enough photo opportunities that you could slap his face on anything, Mr. Manfred, and people would buy it.
And you know what? The fact that he is like the biggest baseball player in the world, or at least the very best, and he's, you know, a multimillionaire, and he is still focused on being like a well-rounded person that cares about, you know, taking time away from that to be a good family member.
So I will read you,
I think that's very admirable to me. Like
in part, yeah. The Angels' response, not Mike Trout's response. The Angels did this for him. In part, the response was, he continually chooses to participate in the community, visiting hospitals, schools, and countless other charities. One of Mike's traits that people admire most is his humility. His brand is built upon generously spending his time engaging with fans, both at home and on the road, while remaining a remarkable baseball player and teammate. So, yeah, I'm 100% in favor of the Angels just throwing down on that.
Right, and it's like, you want to tell me that the MLB doesn't market Aaron Judge? Aaron Judge doesn't go out there filming commercials and things like that to boost his brand. He just plays baseball and is fun.
And Mike Trout is tons of fun, if you've ever sat down and watched him for 15 minutes.
Anyway, the idea that MLB is like, it puts it on the players to market themselves is kind of crazy.
Yeah, that's literally, what job do they have if their job is not to market the game?
I think it involves counting money, which apparently Rob Manfred does not hate. No evidence of him hating the counting money part of the equation. Oh my goodness. All right, so we're going to wind it down here. I normally ask for just a general final thought, but I think more specifically this week, we should give a final thought on what we're expecting to see or to experience in the second half of quote unquote Blue Jays baseball in 2018. So Josh, I'll turn it over to you first. What lies before us?
I think we're going to get a real opportunity to see what some of these fringier prospects are. And I don't say that as an insult. I just meant they're not the Vlad Guerreros and the Bo Bichette guys we expect to be stars right away. talking about Gurriel. I'm talking about Baruchy. I'm talking about the pitchers I mentioned earlier, or even Grichuk in center field, and see, okay, what core could we have next year and get the real extended opportunity to see what that is.
Does that excite you?
No. I think that's what's going to happen.
And for your part, Mr. Dyka.
Yeah, I would say I agree with Josh in that it's going to be kind of a bring on the kids situation in Toronto. And, you know, I'd rather, you know, if they're going to be a team that's struggling, I would rather watch the kids than, you know, Curtis Granderson. Curtis Granderson's, I love Curtis Granderson. He's a great player and, you know, he's done so much for baseball. But at this point in time, like, yeah, it's kind of interesting to see, like, what do they have in Gurriel and, you know, maybe with Alford or whoever. It's, yeah, I'm excited to see like a really young Jays team because, you know, it's a reminder that better days are likely ahead.
I think the Blue Jays, we knew they got old and they're a little younger this year, I guess, because of Grichuk and Hernandez and that, but they are, yeah, they are positively, creaky old team in a lot of ways. So I think both of you guys are right. I think we're going to see the kids. I think it'll be interesting if they do move Granderson or a bullpen piece, and if they end up with a fringy, like you said, major league piece that we don't know about yet. Because I do find it interesting when a new player joins the organization and they just throw them out there and say, all right, well, we know what you look like in that other uniform in AAA, the Teoscar Hernandez scenario. Can you do something? I still like guys who have fun on the field, even though, you know, nobody hits into more double plays. I enjoy watching Solarte play the game. I know they're not going anywhere. So I want people who are fun to watch. I think also Randall Grichuk might genuinely impress in center field. He seems to have done all the right things in right field. So that would be pretty cool to find out that he could be an everyday center fielder. Besides that, I have a feeling the pitching is going to get even worse.
Yep.
And that's going to be just head-bangingly awful. But we're not the Orioles.
I really want to see Danny Jansen. You know, I was just tooling around Fangraphs last week, and he's literally walking and striking out at the same rate. Like, he seems like a legitimately very, at least a very good AAA hitter that doesn't have much left to prove there.
Yep.
And if Russell Martin has his usual actual injury this year, which has seemed to happen every year, I'm sure Danny Jansen gets the call now quicker than you can imagine.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Not for the injury, but for the
opportunity.
Just that we get to see Danny Jansen. Yeah.
Indeed. We do not wish ill of anyone here except possibly the commissioner on this podcast.
Yeah. Russ will be playing third base.
Yeah, obviously. Super utility Russ Martin. We talked about that last week, I think. Yeah. All right. Yeah. You know what? I'm even going to give you a chance for a final thought, Josh, because occasionally you keep things in your pocket.
Troy Tulowitzki's contract has 2 years left on it.
As it turns out, it's a fun fact. All right. That said, you have been Joshua Hausam at Joshua Hausam and Nick Dyka at Nick Dyka. And I have been Greg Wazowski at Coolhead 2010. And this has been Artificial Turf Wars episode number 110. And we'll talk at you next week.